You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, I am recording this from Canada because this past week we finally made the official move. I am now officially a permanent resident and I am surrounded by boxes in my new office and sound tired because I am. But it's been amazing to finally get here and to be unpacking. After months and months of preparation and wondering and hoping. Oh, so yeah, I am now a West Coast person. And I'm super excited about this episode this week. Hopefully all of you who are Patreon supporters popped over to patreon.com/sexgetsreal and listened to your extra juicy extended version of my chat with Dylan, where she talked all about the orgies that she's been a part of and her new epic sexual adventures, and including crossing off a DP scene from her fuck it list. If you want to hear that and you're not a Patreon supporter, you can support at any level to get access to that extra special extended edition. And of course, I'm so grateful that once again, this episode is sponsored by Talkspace, which is an online therapy company. That means therapy can be super affordable and confidential and convenient because you can do it anytime, anywhere, from your phone, from your tablet, from your computer. You can do video or audio or just simply type into the chat, which is great if you're working through something like sexual shame and facing someone in person seems like way too much. You can use Talkspace's wonderful online feature to sign up or to learn more and to let Talkspace know that their support of the show is worth the investment. Make sure you go to Talkspace.com/SGR for Sex Gets Real. And you can use your $30 off your first month with coupon code SGR. So whether you're working through relationship issues or sexual shame, or you're just really struggling right now and could use some support, and hell, all of us could use some support in one form or another, you can specifically ask for a kink aware and a sex positive therapist, and they will find someone who is a great fit for you. So head to Talkspace.com/SGR and use coupon code SGR to get $30 off your first month. So this week's episode is a really interesting one. I read an article on Playboy by their sex and relationship columnist, Bridget Fetisi. And she had gone to an orgasmic meditation intro course. A lot of people know that as OMing. And she had a really, really interesting experience. Now, I haven't talked too much about OMing on the show. I myself have not attended any of their classes. And what I have done is talked to other people who have had a variety of experiences. And Bridget's, I think, is really important for us to highlight. I've got a link to her fascinating article on Playboy at sexgetsreal.com/EP164 for episode 164. And I think that it's really important for us to hold space for multiple experiences. And what I mean by that is, I know people who have used orgasmic meditation for tremendous growth. They have found validation in their pleasure, specifically for folks with a vulva. They have realized that their pleasure is accessible and can be a part of their experience. And in fact, that they're allowed to ask for things that center their pleasure. But I've also talked to a number of other people who have had some pretty troubling experiences with OM, and specifically the way that workshops are run and the way that the company who runs it handles things. And that's where Bridget's story kind of comes in. Bridget went to an intro class and had a very unique experience that I want all of us to think about from kind of a grander scale of when people are selling you on one type of answer to solve all your problems, on very expensive solutions that are going to change your life, in quotes, that we need to be really skeptical. And the reason for that is that human experience, specifically sexual experience, is incredibly varied. We must be creating spaces where lots of different types of language and experiences are accepted and welcomed, where all different kinds of bodies and traumas are held gently. And there is danger in creating a monetized business solution that is very, very well marketed to people who insist that their experiences are not their experiences and who try to reframe them to fit within a very narrow framework and paradigm. And so I invite you to listen to this chat with Bridget. Towards the end, it does get pretty emotional and intense. Bridget talks about some trauma that she experienced. And also, I just want to mention that throughout this episode, the phrases crazy and insane get used a lot to kind of stress how bizarre and unusual and stressful the circumstances were. And since you know, if you've been a longtime listener, that I am doing my best to kind of name ableist language, I just want to name that so that if those words bother you, you can kind of prepare yourself a little bit. But I look forward to hearing what you think about this. I think that it's a small part of a much larger story, but I think it's a very important part. And I want all of us to be much more aware and educated and schooled in seeing places where problematic behavior is happening. So a little bit about Bridget. When she's not penning Playboy.com's sex and dating column or the Playboy Advisor, you can usually find Bridget interviewing people on her podcast, Benched. Once she was dared to do stand-up comedy, it is now her primary reason for getting out of bed. In her free time, Bridget wrangles two insane puppies and is working on her humorous self-help book, Seducing Men is Like Hunting Cows. So here is my chat with Bridget and all about orgasmic meditation. Welcome to the show, Bridget. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Yeah. Yay. So how I kind of got connected with you was you write for Playboy. You're their sex and relationship advice columnist.
Yes.
And so, of course, I will have a link to your column on sexgetsreal.com for this episode because I want everyone to go check it out. But you wrote a piece called The Cost of Healing, What Everyone Ignores About Orgasmic Meditation. And I'm sure lots of listeners are familiar with Oming. The founder of Om wrote a book called Slow Sex that I'm sure a lot of people have also read. And I'm sure there's a mixture of experiences. But for people who aren't familiar, how was it kind of introduced to you?
I had never heard of it, which is hilarious, being that I'm a hippie and also in the sex and relationship world, although it's I constantly am hearing about things that I've never heard about before, so I guess it's not that weird. But the woman who kind of recruited me to go to one of their day, like, intro classes, she saw me on Holly and Michael's show. It's on Playboy. They're on Playboy Radio. They're big proponents of the swinger life. They're amazing. They had me on their show, and I think she saw it, and then she reached out to me on Facebook and said, oh, hey, we're in the same industry. I'd love to have you come check this out. Mm-hmm. And I knew nothing about it, and then I signed up and ran it by my editor, who was like, we did this 3 years ago, Bridget. I was like, listen to what I discovered. He's like, yeah, we covered that 3 years ago. glad you're our expert. And then, sorry if there are dogs barking. I have two dogs. They're very defensive of the house. But he was like, I'd still love to get your take on it. He would probably live to regret that, as I say in the article, because it took me like 2 weeks to kind of get my mind around it. So the intake person called me and she was asking me all these questions, if I'd ever heard of OHM. And she kind of made it sound like, well, then you're going to, you know, take your pants off and some stranger is going to, you know, OHM you. Mm-hmm. Which is basically strokes. She made it sound like I was going to get stroked, where they do the, for those two or three people who don't know what it is, the OHM practice is a practice where one person is the recipient and one person is the strokee, and they very specifically stroke a very specific part of your clit for about 15 minutes. And there's a whole nest and a whole everything that goes along with it. Lots of terminology.
Yeah.
And lots of like made up words. And so I was like, oh, what did I get myself into? Because I thought it was just meditation. I was like, oh, I just thought it was some form of mental masturbating, which is what I consider all meditation. But I didn't realize this was actually like, I don't know. I just don't know how this one slipped through the cracks. So then I brought my friend with me, kind of, she's also a journalist, and I just wanted somebody to go have the experience with. And so she came along and we went down on, it was like a Saturday in downtown LA. And yeah, so that's how I heard about it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have a chance to read every single blog online, nor did I even realize that so many had been written until after the fact, because it was also last minute.
Yeah.
Which is actually a good thing, I think.
Yeah, that way you were probably just kind of like, I'll see what happens, instead of having all these influences.
Exactly. I think I might have, if I had had more time to prep and to look into it, I'm not sure that I would have just been so wide-eyed, like a newborn baby in the world. You know, I was like, what is this? What's going on? Like an acid trip.
So I have one friend who actually was part of an OHMing group for about 3 years, and she had a wonderfully positive experience with them and made really good friends. And so, like, part of what I just want to acknowledge for everyone listening is that there are people out there who have done OHMing and had really transformative experiences and tapped into pleasure and parts of their bodies that they didn't know they could. But on the same time, I have talked to a number of people who have had some pretty traumatic experiences as a result of OHM. And interestingly enough, Sunny Megatron, who has a Showtime show called Sex with Sunny Megatron, and her husband, Ken, who's the producer, you know, they have an entire show around sex, and they've done clown sex and doll sex and balloon sex. And they've gone and talked to all these people who have all these different things. And they are very public about the fact that of all of the people they've gone and talked to and experienced with, that their OHM experience was the most unsettling.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. So one of the things that's been kind of brought to my attention, and my article got posted in a message board that has all these kind of OHM survivors. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if we can say the company name or not on here, but the people on that message board, some of them emailed me, and, you know, they were trying to make it clear that there's a difference between OHM and that company that is selling OHM. And I still haven't really figured out which came first, the chicken or the egg, because in my research, it seems like the technique, although it did exist before the founder wrote a book about it and started her little cult community up in the Bay Area, that it was basically kind of passed down through what was known to be a cult. And so I don't know. I hadn't heard of it anywhere else outside, and I could be mistaken, but it seems like in terms of monetizing it, that specific company that I wrote about they're leading the charge. Mm-hmm. And everyone I know who ohms or is in the ohm practice, that's where they first heard of it. So I still haven't really figured out how to differentiate. And, but some people have made it clear that that I shouldn't judge the ohming because of the organization. It's like separate the practice from the messenger. So it sounds like a lot of people have found a lot of good in the practice. Mm-hmm. And it's like anything, like even yoga, you know, you have these people who are messed up personalities and that can taint your experience of the practice.
Yes. So, you know, I think there's something really beautiful in a practice that like centers female pleasure, a space that's notoriously neglected when we talk about sex, that, you know, we kind of know that to speak, you know, very kind of heteronormativity, that men kind of assume that their orgasm is a given and that an orgasm with a woman is kind of a nice to have. And so to have a practice that actually is all about non-reciprocal pleasure for someone with a clitoris, I think is like a pretty wonderful thing. And I can see people really needing that permission of like, I don't have to perform with you. I can just receive this touch and this pleasure. And for me, I think that's a wonderful thing. But I would love it if you could tell us a little bit about what happened when you actually got to that class and what started to not feel very good for you as it kind of unfolded.
Well, I mean, you just brought up so many things in my brain. I don't even know how to... We went in and it kind of just right away, it was just a weird vibe. I don't know how you know, there's usually not a word to describe those kind of whatever that other 90% of my brain that I'm not aware of is picking up on. Body language. What is it? Like 90% of all communication is nonverbal, some crazy number. Just the way they were dressed seemed overtly sexual and that in a weird kind of luring way. Then when we went in, there was a very clear kind of power structure, which is always unnerving to me and something that I'm already a little bit hesitant about when there's like this, when there are clearly people who are kind of scurrying around. I don't know. That's a weird vibe too, because it's not any different than if you were on a set of a movie and there are PAs running around and then the directors, but there is something weirdly different about it. There was like this weird bowing of the head. It wasn't physical. It felt like that, you know, kind of submissive, obedience or something. So that kind of struck me right away. And then I don't like windowless rooms. I don't like them. They creep me out. And it was a soundstage, so it was like a windowless space. And it had been raining nonstop. It was the first kind of beautiful sunny day we had had. So when I left, I was just so angry that I wasted a whole day inside. So that kind of kicked it off. And then we said hello and I sat down and then they got right into it. And they brought out a little platform and they sat down and got everybody to kind of share why they were there. And that was weird too, because the way that the whole tone of, you know, somebody would be like, well, I'm here because I was molested or I'm an incest survivor. And they're like, oh, nice, gorgeous, share. Next. You know, they're trying to get through 75 people of why they're there, and people would be confessing these kind of soul-bearing horrific traumas they experienced, and they would just almost, it felt very minimizing. Mm-hmm. And then move on to the next person.
just a quick aside, don't forget that there are going to be some things later in this episode that could potentially be really triggering, especially if you've experienced certain kinds of trauma. So one, take care of yourself around that. And two, if you don't already have support, Talkspace is this episode's sponsor, and they are an online therapy company that matches you with a therapist that is experienced and licensed and based on exactly what you are looking for. It's as little as $32 a week, and with our coupon code, you get $30 off your first month. So if you find that you are in a place where you could really use some support, processing some trauma, processing something that has really been troubling you, or a place where you feel stuck, go to talkspace.com/SGR for Sex Gets Real and use coupon code SGR to get that $30 off. Back to Bridget and her story.
And even before they started the sharing, everybody who was just chattering while they were waiting for them to sit down and get everyone going, there's a DJ. It was so, like, the tone was just so weird to me. I couldn't really get my mind around it. It was like, is this a party? Am I in a strip club? Like, what? I don't know. I felt like I was in San Francisco, one of those places that's like a, there's a bar in San Francisco and it's like half Indian restaurant, half Irish. It's like there's all these crazy, confusing, paradoxical things happening. And you're kind of, it's hard. You're like, what's the tone here? What's the theme? Which is fine for a bar, not so okay in like an intimate vagina setting.
I think it makes people vulnerable.
Yeah, it preys on vulnerable. I mean, there is something, I don't know. It's not like they're volunteering their efforts. Mm-hmm. These are some of the, it preys on that desire. It's such a basic human desire to have a better quality of life, or to feel like they belong, or to fill some kind of hole. So yeah. I've been in different things, and I hate whenever I hear you get what you invest in something. I do agree there's some truth to that, but I get a lot of things out of organizations that are donation only and free.
Yeah.
And so that line of thinking always kind of trips a little bit of a warning for me, because it's like what classic con men say.
Absolutely.
So that was kind of how it started. And I already, when people were sharing and they were kind of minimizing, I didn't like that. I felt like I didn't share something that revealing. And so I couldn't imagine how that would feel.
Yeah.
And it felt long. It was, and then they gave their testimonials and I was listening to them, but they weren't that engaging because they felt so kind of rehearsed. And I was just like, I said it in the article. And people have called me out on that too. They're like, well, you weren't listening to their testimonials, then you didn't hear how life changing they were. And I heard how life changing they were. But it's also their job to sit up there and tell us that these things change their life. So it's not like some random person on the street who's telling me this. This is someone who's getting paid to tell me that their life was changed by this. That's literally what their job is. And it did have that like infomercial vibe, you know, the testimonials where it's like, I use this mop and my kitchen floor has never been cleaner. And then I was thinking like how easy it is to kind of start a cult, basically. I was like, here we've taken such a basic, you know, I was thinking about Bikram yoga and how he took like the, you know, very just ripped out a sequence of poses that had been there forever and added heat and branded it. And I was thinking about even something like Soul Cycle, where it's like, now we're going to take cycling and add some push-ups and music. And it's like, it's all marketing. It's all marketing. And I think that was the reverie the rabbit hole I went down while they were giving their testimonials was just like, wow, what a great marketing scheme this is.
Yeah.
And then they did the demo right before lunch, mm-hmm. and that was kind of weird. I mean, progressively as the day went on, I was just getting more and more agitated.
Yeah.
Because then they did the demo, and I was off to the left, so I couldn't really see. I wasn't right in front. They kind of brought out a massage table and put it on the little platform, and then they had the couple get up there, and he stroked her for 15 minutes. And while they did that, they wanted everybody to start calling out what they were feeling in their body. So mm-hmm. the sensations that were coming up, and it was weird the way everyone was calling it out, because the people who kind of were in the back, the volunteer who had been to, you know, like 6 or 7 of these, they started it off, and they would say it almost very robotically, like heat in my bowels.
Hmm.
It was just so, so weird.
Yeah.
And so I started losing it. I couldn't even look. I was like looking down. Like I felt like a child in church. Like when you're not, I was like flashback to Catholic school when my best friend and I would be in church and something would happen and I would have to contain my laughter, and it was painful. It was like I was holding my breath, trying to breathe, breathing through the laughter. And it just got, you know, more. I'm a comic too and a writer, so mm-hmm. it's hard for me sometimes to fully immerse myself in any experience, let alone an experience that has this like weird element of ridiculousness to it. And I don't want to take away from anyone who is in the experience, because if someone is getting something out of it and finding God and profound, you know, stillness, I don't want to interrupt that with my hysterical laughter. So I just sat there and tried to keep it together for 15 minutes, the longest 15 minutes of my life. Then it was lunch, and we stayed for the lunch, which was also more just testimonials. That was kind of where they were trying to sell you on the becoming OHM certified.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you could teach. And my friend was like, she stayed, and I looked at her and I was like, how much is it? And she's like, 14. I'm like, 1400. And she's like, 1000. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
yeah,
get out of here. That is insane. To do this? Like, no, that's so much money. I could go become a nurse or something. I mean, that's so much money to me. I'm crazy, but that is a lot of money to spend. And so we stayed for that. And then they kind of asked me why I wasn't participating. They were like, Bridget, we noticed you were awfully quiet during the demonstration. Why didn't you call out any of your sensations? And I was honest. I'm like, honestly, I was just trying not to laugh. Like, I was trying not to laugh. And they were like, oh, that's a totally normal response. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, and even the way they talked to me, that I'm not exaggerating. And this is the kind of way they spoke. Like, that's a totally normal response. And a lot of people have it. That's just you not being able to embrace the orgasm. It's very powerful and charged, and I don't think you're fully able to take it on. And I was like, okay, lady, whatever. You know, I sat there because I am curious, and as a journalist, I'm still always going to be polite. But there was a part of me that was like, don't tell me I'm crazy, because I'm in a crazy situation. I didn't like that they were trying to make me feel like, you know, and they could have been like, yeah, it is a little different at first, the first time you see it. And it is kind of, isn't it kind of funny or whatever, but just trying to like normalize it like that. I was like, you're denying my own experience,
right?
You know, that, right. I don't like that. It's especially in a place where I'm supposed to feel like you take my experience into consideration, but just that blanket, like, oh, this is your fault. I didn't like that at all. And then even before the demo, I was trying to go to the bathroom because I've been drinking tea all morning. And they wouldn't let me go to the bathroom. And that was a big red flag. Just that they're like, oh no. And oh, that's just because you're nervous. That's what they told me. I'm like, I'm not fucking nervous about seeing someone get an orgasm. You know, like I've seen people have orgasms before. I'm not like a virgin. And I watch a lot of porn and I've been to sex parties. Like this isn't my first hodeo. Mm-hmm. I don't know that those kinds of things put me, that was when it kind of shifted from me being like, oh, this is a little weird to like, I don't like this. Yeah. I don't like any of it.
Yeah. I know some of the stuff that really stood out for me as I was reading your article was one, that not allowing you to pee and trying to tell you what was going on. And also exactly what you're saying about like you saying, I'm trying not to laugh. And then them telling you what that means. You know, for me as a sex educator, my job is to help people actually figure out what it is that they're feeling and then let that be true. And it's right. Like what they're trying to do is actually control people's experiences. And the other thing that I really found disconcerting is that they told people like, you have to call it the pussy or the cock.
Yeah, that was weird. And that, I don't know if that's changed or not. And it was never, ever explained to me why. And I guess it was, there's some reason for why it was called that. And then when I was talking to some people who emailed me, I asked them what the deal with that was, and they said, "Oh no, the language has changed now, so those people just must not have been updated." Because I was like, I kept looking at my friend. You know, pussy has become, whether we like it or not, a pretty charged word because of the politics that were surrounding it. So mm-hmm. even just hearing, so, and then even using that term when it's supposed to be kind of clinical. And that was the other thing that I couldn't really figure out, where it's like, oh, we're going to take this orgasm to another place where it's beyond the orgasm 2.0, where it's beyond, you know, the end result based orgasm, mm-hmm. The climax based orgasm. And to a place where you're just in the orgasm state. And so I couldn't really figure out if it was like sexual or, and then there was this whole clinical aspect of it and the rubber gloves and all of it. Again, it was like too many competing, like just seeing rubber gloves and hearing someone say, now touch the pussy. It's so fucking weird to me because those two things have such, different connotations in your brain from birth, you know, like from a young, when you see rubber gloves, you're like, oh, clinical doctor, at least I do. And then hearing it kind of juxtaposed with the word like pussy and cock, it was so, I don't know. It made me feel really uncomfortable. I felt like I was watching someone get violated. Because of that juxtaposition, because it's like, I just automatically think doctor, you know, when I see someone with gloves near a vagina. That's just the only time anyone's ever had gloves near my vagina has been when, you know, my gyno is going in for a look.
I see. I use gloves for sex like all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't. Super, and I'm sure that a lot of people do. You know, I'm sure that that's like very common.
But like, I totally get what you're saying. And that like, when I think you're doing, because I've been to hand sex demos before where people are teaching you hand techniques for sex with a vulva or sex with a penis. And, you know, like, I think one of the big things is kind of for educators saying, like, this is the language I'm going to use, but use the language that feels good for you. Because for a lot of people, saying cock feels terrifying and right. or it feels gross. And so, like, giving people the chance to use the language, but also, like, one of the things I've seen done really well is like, you know, this might turn you on a little bit and that's super okay. And you also might feel kind of awkward and that's also super okay. This is kind of a weird situation, but like, we're just going to do our best. And if you have questions, let me know. And what I'm hearing is kind of this like, well, we're the authority and like, we're trying to have this very like serious kind of thing. But at the same time, not allowing people to have their reactions and use their words and actually like,
explain their experiences. And so then you get this weird, like, is it sexy or is it not? And am I allowed to feel the way that I feel? And then, like, to me, I think what's so shocking is to then, when you're kind of uncomfortable and you've shared a trauma and you've just seen someone have an orgasm, which may be the very first time you've ever really seen that in like a public space. And so you're feeling vulnerable, to then have people saying, hey, if you take this weekend course, it's only $500. Or if you want to do our retreat, it's only $4,000, which are like the actual prices, right? I mean, that feels to me very, very questionable. Of you've got people in heightened states or triggered states or disassociated states, and now you're trying to sell them things.
Yeah, which is like exactly when they tried to sell everybody on the "Buy If You Act Today" move, where it was like right after the demo, where they had just explained the room was going to be supercharged, and they're like, "If you're excited about this, you know," they didn't even try and hide that it was like, "Go run back that right now with your credit card and like get." It was just, I don't know. It was, and I guess. Because I was just thinking about what you were saying, and it was like, yeah, I've actually used gloves during sex stuff too, but they were black, and so maybe it was like the colors were like, I don't know, maybe it was just that they were like standard, you know, just white doctor gloves that kind of like threw me, because I'm like, oh yeah, I have used gloves, but they've always been kind of like sexy and black.
Like black or purple.
Not like, I don't know, not like these look very just like, all right, even the way they put them on creeps me out. It was just, I just was like, everything about this is so, and I know that a lot of my experience, all of it, is my own, you know, it's being filtered through my own experiences and my own view of the world and whatever filters there are that I'm going to project onto that experience, which is, but it did feel like there wasn't, you know, when you're taking a situation like that and then you're trying to assign feelings that they want you to have, it feels very manipulative. Yeah. So suddenly I'm being manipulated. My experience is being manipulated so that it can fit their version of what this experience is, so that I need them or I want them, or they're trying to figure out what, you know, how to trigger my interest or whatever. And the more that I've learned from people who have been on the inside, that's absolutely what they're doing. They don't even try and hide the fact. And when they're training them to that, they should, you know, find, they're using all of that information that you give when you're saying, when you're talking about why you're there, when they do the intake, to basically find your desire points and figure out how to squeeze as much money as they can out of you. And one guy emailed me and told me that he was at one session where a guy stood up and the founder was there, and he said, "I'm here despite the fact that my wife is going to divorcing me, and my teenage girls aren't talking to me because I'm spending all of their college money and their inheritance on Ohm, and I'm still here." And she, you know, gave him like a huge applause, and everyone in the room supported that. And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't seem like a healthy, that's like, if you took that in any situation, say that he was a gambling addict, nobody would be clapping, you know, like spending your children's college inheritance on anything is usually a red flag that you've gone down like some kind of rabbit hole that you should probably find your way out of.
Yeah. And there was actually a piece that I read maybe 2 or 3 years ago by a woman who, I believe it was Boston, but I know for sure it was in the Northeast, who had gone to a couple of OM sessions. And this is back when, you know, even in the introduction, everyone got OM'd. And so like you kind of show up for your first time and you take your pants off and you have someone manipulate your clit. And And for some people, that's rad, and for other people, it's not. And so she had gone a couple of times and decided, like, maybe this will be cool for me. But she showed up at this one session, and she didn't have a partner. And so she was just going to kind of go and see if anybody felt like a good fit. And if not, you know, then she was just going to either observe or leave. And there was a gentleman there who kept saying, like, hey, I'd really like to be your partner. And she got this really terrible feeling from him. And so she turned him down. And the organizers actually came to her and said, like, he's paid a lot of money to be here and you don't actually have a partner. And so, like, you really need to consider having him as a partner. And she kind of said, no, I really don't feel comfortable with that. And they continued to pressure her and kind of said, if you're not going to let him be your partner, then you're going to have to leave.
Whoa.
And so she ended up leaving and talking to some other people who had similar experiences where they were pressured to allow men they didn't know to touch them because the men had paid their $500 and Ohm had to deliver a clitoris.
Whoa.
And so that was when I really started kind of paying attention to, like, to me, I see nothing wrong at all with public sex or with, you know, having a stranger touch you or from doing pleasure. But when it gets into a place where there's expectations and people aren't honoring your boundaries and setting really clear rules around, like, protecting the people making themselves most vulnerable and making these promises and then reading your account and hearing from other people, like, it's just red flag after red flag after red flag. And before we hopped on the call, I think one of the things you said that was just so profound was, like, we need to pay attention when we start getting those feelings in our gut, you know, around any kind of leader, be it a yoga leader or an Ohm leader,
yeah,
or a leader, that, like, maybe something isn't feeling good. And yet we talk ourselves out of it. We let people convince us that it's okay. And then we find ourselves in really terrible situations that are potentially really traumatic. And I know, like, you talk about in the article how you left and you actually were, like, really fucked up for a couple of days because you were so triggered.
I don't even know if I'm still quite – I feel like it kind of set so many things in motion. But it's good because I have a lot of support and, you know, a great therapist and all of these things. But I definitely felt – when I left and started reading, because so I had my experience and then I wrote down everything that I felt, you know, just in my experience, and then started reading every article that had been written about it. And I started feeling crazy. I was like, am I crazy? Why am I the only person that I think I had read like one before I went in? And I think it was the big one that somebody did. And it was actually really good because it seemed pretty neutral. It was like the click cult one.
Mm-hmm.
But I started, you know, doubting my own experience because they had been doubting it. And then as I read all of these other pieces, I was like, why? I would have thought that I would have gone online and it would have been one thing after another of people being like, this is crazy. I've had like emails from therapists up in the Bay Area thanking me. One therapist wrote me and she said she's been trying to get journalists to write it for 7 years. An investigative report into like the house up there and the whole ORC community that exists around it. And that journalists would start and their editors would almost always abandon it because the founder is so litigious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big red flag.
Like, yeah.
When you can't even investigate something, that's not good. And then, yeah, I did have my own personal like trauma come up that I didn't even realize. I mean, I'm 38 years old. I've been through a lot and I've done a lot of work. And only now, I would say in the past 2 years, a large part of the reason for that probably is due to the fact that I actually have been sober for over 3 years. So a lot of stuff that I just was medicating is now coming up. But I would also say that I'm only just now beginning to understand trauma and how it affects your body and life forever.
Yeah.
Just, I think I thought, you know, you could just get over it, and understanding that you have to really integrate it, and that things in your life are going to bring it up again in a different way that you might not have expected. And then it's time for another evaluation or reintegration.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened, where it was a situation from when I was 19, and it was a man who was very close to me. It was at a time when I was very vulnerable. I was 19 and I was just out of rehab for a heroin addiction. And he kind of sold me on this idea of sexual spirituality. And it was very insidious. And I was so desperate. I was so desperate for anything because I felt so lost. I didn't have anything. I had been completely emptied out by my addiction. I had lost everything. I had lost my family. I had been kicked out of school. I had been fired from my very first job. I was a straight A student. It was like, I had no idea how I got to that point and didn't really think things could get worse until they did. And then he came along and was somebody who had been in my life for a while. Because of the nature of his relationship to my mother, and he's my stepdad. And so he came in and I was like, oh, this man who's like been a little bit crazy my whole life is acting like a father figure, finally, yay. And somebody who's supportive of me and believes in me. Then it got like, it was like the boiling frog, you know, just things, little things like, oh, you need to get comfortable like laying with me and you need to get comfortable. And it was that same thing of like that feeling like something's not right, but I didn't want something not to be right. Yeah. I wanted it to not be what I felt like it was, because that alternative version of the reality was too hard for me to even get my mind around at that age. And that's why I think I felt so much rage when I left the intro class, because I did see young people in there and I was like, the mama bear in me, it like makes me want to cry right now. It just like came out. I was like, you fucking kidding me with that? Because if I was that 19-year-old girl and had found something like that, I probably would have bought it hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. There's not any doubt in my mind, because I was so impressionable and so desperately wanting, just so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it brought up like all that shit, all of it came up of like the feelings of, like, is this my fault? Is doubting my own experience? Is this real? And then also feeling abandoned by people who were supposed to protect me.
Yeah.
So like all of it came up, and still, obviously, it like, even just talking about it, and right now I'm actually more upset again for like the fact that people do this and exploit people, and not on top of like exploiting their spirit, they exploit them for money too. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. It's so like, whenever you, I cannot think of a single example of when you start taking sex and spirituality and money and mash them all together, mm-hmm. and have that be a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure one exists, maybe, but I can't think of any time when you take those three things and start, the waters get so murky, and there's already so much shame around spirituality and sexuality. And then there's already so much shame around people and their financial relationship. And then, you know, I feel like money and sex, that's fine. That seems to be like a straight, you know, business transaction. Mm-hmm. But when you, and even money and spirituality, but when for some reason, when you take the three of them, it gets gets real, real muddy real fast.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think there are some people out there who do it well, but I think that it takes
constant vigilance. And I also think that it takes people who are deeply trauma informed and who have people on their team who are deeply trauma informed, because you cannot have people saying, I was molested. I'm an incest survivor. I'm a rape survivor. I'm a multiple rape survivor. I was raised in a place where my sexuality is a deep source of shame, and not have that received with like genuine care and genuine support, and to have it just kind of like, thanks for sharing, let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, that's a dangerous, dangerous place to be. And I mean, I'm just like, thank you so much for sharing like yourself and your story with us in this, because I think you're so right. Like, I mean, the listeners know I'm a multiple rape survivor, and so I've talked about that at length on the show. And
oh, and I've been raped. Yeah. Like that too.
Yeah.
For some reason this brought up the that like spiritual, that weird slippery.
Totally. Yeah, well, and like anybody who's in a leadership position who is then requesting access to your body, or who is creating rules around how you experience your body. And then you're right, like you start adding money on top of that. And that is a very, very, very fine line and a tight edge to walk ethically. And
it's like, not ethical.
Yeah.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think that most people get in trouble for it at some point when they're trying to walk that line. Mm-hmm. Because it's so, it runs into, you know, you hear about all these ashrams where there are these like cult leaders who have such a huge personality and they're taking advantage of, I mean, ashrams are a hotbed of people who are just lost in the world.
Yeah.
And there are so, I don't know, it's just so disconcerting to me that it's so supported by people that are trustworthy. Mm-hmm. You know, like so many people look up to Tim Ferriss, for example.
Yeah, and like I think the takeaway that I want for listeners in just kind of sharing your experience is like, you're allowed to love masturbating, and you're allowed to love the technique of oming if it's worked for you, and you're allowed to share your body with others, and you're allowed to pay for sex, and you're allowed to have all of these things. But like, we need to hold people accountable who are taking advantage and being manipulative. And we also need to create safe spaces where when we're feeling like something's not quite right, it's okay to actually like bring that up, right? Whether it's someone who's running a kink workshop, or someone who's organizing a play party, or someone who has a multi-million dollar business doing something like oming, like we really need to care for ourselves in those spaces, because it's so easy to have boundaries pushed, to be manipulated and coerced, because there's so much power at play that can be invisible, especially to people who are new to it. You know, like the first time you go to a workshop, you don't realize there's power dynamics in the room, but that expert at the front of the room has a tremendous amount of power, and it's easy to be influenced by that. And, you know, so just like having conversations like this, I think is important, just because if it just helps to raise that awareness just a little bit so that we can ask some questions and kind of trust that gut feeling. Cause to me, it's better to go into a situation and have kind of that like, something about this isn't feeling good, and to just leave and then decide maybe I should give it another try, rather than like, I should tough it out because someone said it was great, and then it ends up being terrible.
Yeah, and traumatic, because that's right. The thing about trauma is that when it does come up, you can actually re-traumatize yourself if you aren't, you know, if you had nonverbal, you know, sexual assault, incest survivors, if you were nonverbal at that stage, when you don't even know what's going to trigger your trauma, it's buried so deeply in your body, mm-hmm. that if you don't have people who know, it would be so easy, and especially in a situation like that, to trigger something in you that you didn't even know is there. And if you don't have someone who's trained in helping you as a, you know, with basically PTSD, which is what will come up, mm-hmm. you know, ground your feet, where's your butt touching the chair, name five things that are blue in the room, get yeah. you back into yourself. If you don't have people who are trained in that, it is a it can be so massively dangerous. And the emails that I've received and all of, I can't even tell you the stuff that I've gotten since that, I was so scared to write it because I did feel kind of isolated and alone, and I didn't want to call out other journalists. You know, I felt yeah. very isolated in my opinion, but now that I've received all of these emails from people and just the stories that they tell me, I'm glad I did it. Mm-hmm. I'm glad because they don't feel so alone right. because they didn't feel represented either in their experience.
Yeah.
And just hearing a lot of the stories of people being, you know, triggered in the, and they were, and one person said, even if you stop one person from going into that without just, without some other perspective on it, then you've done a good job.
Yeah.
And yeah, it did. It is, I think, our responsibility as in particular sex educators to be highly, and as you are a rape survivor, as I am, to be highly sensitive to the trauma that many, 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 many other people have experienced in their life. And yeah. like you said, when they're going into these, it's just our job. It's our, I kind of think it's like our job. We yeah. need to be like the watchdogs and the people who are keeping other people who we might feel, we need to be the mama bears that are looking out mm-hmm. and saying, no, you can't take these young, impressionable men and women and mess with their minds, because essentially that's really what it is.
Yeah. Well, I would love for people to be able to stay in touch with you. I'm of course going to link to your article on Playboy about orgasmic meditation. If folks want to go to sexgetsreal.com, you have a huge piece on herpes coming out for Playboy soon. And you also just wrote a piece on blacking out for Vice. And so I'll have links for those too, but could you share with people how they can kind of stay in touch and see what you're yeah. cooking up and what you're writing about?
I'm Bridget Fetisi on Facebook on that page. I live on Twitter. I mean, Twitter is like my home. If any of the social medias are my home base, I would say find me on Twitter at Bridget Fetisi. That's just the easiest place to find me. And it's where I don't really Instagram because I'm an old, no, I'm just kidding. I just never got into it. I don't know. I can only deal with one social media, I think. But they can find me on, yeah, Twitter is the best way to find me. And my podcast, Bench Podcast, I'm very excited about it. It's pretty new. We've only done 30 episodes, but people seem to like really love it. We have a very loyal fan base already. And that's at Benched Podcast. And they can find me, I mean, it's Bridget Fetisi all across the board. And if they want to email me, they can just email me. It's in my Twitter bio. It's fetisicomedy@gmail.com. So
awesome.
I'm easy to find.
Yeah. Well, I will have links to all of those places, including your podcast, which is
Thank you
and a comedian friend of yours talking about dating and relationships and having relationship experts on and kind of like how shit-tastic and weird navigating dating is these days.
It gets vulnerable. Yeah. Everyone leaves and they're like, why did that feel like therapy? Or like, it does get a little group therapy like, but it's fun. It's a fun, wild ride.
Well, I hope everyone goes to check it out. Of course, head to sexgetsreal.com for this episode to check out the articles and all of Bridget's links. And if you have thoughts or questions about what we just discussed, you have confessions of your own or questions for future episodes, you can write to me using the contact form there. I love hearing from you. Thank you so much, Bridget, for being here and sharing your story with us. It was
powerful
and important. And to all the listeners, thank you so much for joining us this week. I will talk to you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.